I owned 30% of DX Communications. Richard had 40%, and another partner, John White, also had 30%. John was older than us, and was great at the operational side of the business. Richard managed the business, while I drove the sales and marketing. Together, the three of us made a pretty good team, and we're still the best of friends today. I'd worked in mobile phones long enough to know that the future was in retail, so we opened our first shop in Pollock Shields in Glasgow, and over the next 5 years we expanded rapidly, eventually opening 170 outlets. We didn't know much about running a company, and we made a lot of mistakes. We hired cheap staff rather than the right staff, and we could have struck far more favourable contracts with customers. But we were lucky. The mobile phone business was growing so rapidly that new cash was constantly being thrown into the industry, and this kept us going at times when we probably should have gone under. It was pretty chaotic and exhausting. We were always robbing Peter to pay Paul and begging for more time with our suppliers. After about 2 years, the business needed to borrow more money, and the banks asked for our homes as security. Mary was pregnant with our second child at the time, and I didn't want to worry her, so I didn't tell her what I'd done. I always meant to tell her, but the business started to do well again, and there didn't seem to be any risk. Inevitably, though, we had a cash flow crisis, and we needed emergency funding. We were turned down by everyone, and I remember lying awake all night working out how I could tell Mary the bank would repossess our house, wondering if we'd be able to move in with my in-laws, and then realizing I'd be out of my ear for not telling her in the first place. Thankfully, we got a loan from the Bank of Scotland, and we weathered the storm. That said, we still knew very little about keeping accounts, or our responsibilities as directors. People said we were over-trading, and we didn't even know what they meant. Of course, it meant we were expanding too quickly and were very vulnerable. I was never that worried, though. I always thought we were in the right business, and I always knew the business would succeed. In 1996, when I was 29, the business was flying, and we sold a 25% stake to Cellnet, now O2. My share of that was £1,070,000. I framed the bank statement that shows the money transferred into my account. My balance went from being £4,000 overdrawn to a balance of £1,029,000 once the lawyers had taken the cut. I'd done what I'd set out to do. I'd become a millionaire a month before I turned 30. It was a wonderful moment. We'd all worked so hard, putting in 70 and 80-hour weeks for almost 6 years, and now we'd achieved financial security. In 1999, we sold the rest of our interest in the company, which by then was valued at £42 million. In the years since, I've started a series of businesses. I'm now involved in around 9, and although I've made a lot of money since, that first million is still special. What's the best advice you've ever had? At DX, when we had about 6 or 7 shops, we wrote to Sir Tom Farmer, the founder of QuickFit, and he told us something that I've never forgotten. It's all about people. You have to remember that your staff have lives outside work, and sometimes they might have had a bad day, but the more you understand your people, the more you get out of them. Treat them as you would a friend. Be there when they need you, and make them feel like they're on the inside and involved in decision-making. Companies don't succeed. People do. What do you wish you'd known from the start? Always pay for the best people you can find. What's the one thing you'd say to someone starting their first business? It doesn't matter how focused you are. You've got to find the right people and inspire and motivate them and make sure you share your vision with them. Communicate with them. If you're not a great leader, you won't achieve what you want to. Raising finance. I'm going to take the different options in the order I think are best from the entrepreneur's point of view. By far the best way to fund a business is putting your own money into it. DIY. There are 2 very good reasons why self-funding is my preferred route. Firstly, you retain control. Secondly, if you put your own money into it, I'm damn sure you'll work a lot harder to make your business a success. I'm far more likely to invest in a company if the founding entrepreneurs have already invested in it themselves. Not only will I be impressed by their commitment, but because the business will have been in operation for several months, I can see the beginnings of a track record before I part with my money. Banks take a similar view. Borrowing from the bank. Some of the biggest fights of my career have been with bank managers. I've been convinced it's a sure thing, and they've begged, incorrectly as it turned out, to differ. Despite these debates, I still believe that borrowing from a bank is the best way if you can't raise the funds yourself. But it's important you understand how banks work. The two things that might not be obvious to a first-time entrepreneur are that A, banks have strict lending criteria, and you need to be able to tick all their boxes for them to say yes, and B, banks don't take risks. As long as you understand these two things, you can usually get what you want out of your high street lender. Each bank has slightly different lending criteria. Before you send your business plan to any bank, pick up their literature and ask their new business manager, every decent-sized branch has one, what their lending criteria are. Then simply tweak your business plan to make sure it demonstrates how well you stack up against their targets. Risk intolerance. When a bank lends you money, it will ask for something in return. Security. A bank will want your car, your home, anything of value against your business going bust. As one bank manager said to me, we're not a bookies. And if your bank smells the slightest whiff of risk, you might be asked to pay a higher rate of interest, or for a guarantor, a relative or friend who is willing to put their property up as collateral in lieu of yours. The thing you must never forget about banks is that if you default, they will seize your assets and auction them off to whoever offers them enough money to repay their loan. If you're lucky, there might be something left over that they'll return to you, but they really don't care about your financial well-being, only theirs. When I first started, the only banks I'd heard of were the ones in my local high street. There are hundreds of other, smaller banks that can't compete on visibility with the high street names, so they compete on deals. If you look at the money section of your newspaper, you'll see the best loan deals are rarely from the names you recognise. Use a website like www.moneysupermarket.com and you'll see even more banks you've never heard of. Not only do these banks